Hello everybody, I'm George from Ireland. Thank you for going to my channel. This is about Mikhail Sergeyevich Gorbachev. So it's 41 years yesterday since he was appointed General Secretary of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. It was just, I think, the day after Konstantin Chernenko died. So that was it. You know, the General Secretary, he was the boss, really, not actually head of state. That was chairman of the presidium. Gorbachev made himself also president of the USSR, so in the last year of the USSR's existence. So Gorbachev was a very consequential figure, even though he only led that country for 6 years, and he led it to its end, to the dissolution. So he took it from being a totalitarian state, very much in the shadow of Stalin, to being a fully democratic country. And he transitioned from a command economy to a capitalist system, hadn't completely gone capitalist right at the end. So Gorbachev, he's freed Eastern Europe. He ended the slave labor camps. He gave people back their rights. He doesn't get the recognition he deserves, that yes, there'll be free expression. And yes, you can form a political party you want. And we're going to have elections, real elections, competitive elections that opposition parties can win. And he ended discrimination against religious practitioners and so forth. He ended that war in Afghanistan. So really, he's the liberator for his people. He doesn't get the credit he deserves. I know he's execrated in some former Soviet countries these days. So de minimis incipe. He came from, I think, farming family in a village near Stavropol in southern Russia. And he said that some distant relatives of his were unfairly accused of being kulaks and sent to the Gulag in the 1930s. So, but he was a bright boy. He was a key member of Komsomol, the Communist Youth Organization. He went to Moscow State University to read law after the Second World War. In those 5 years, they only earned one pair of trousers. So they had to study for 6 days a week. Sunday was their only day off, had to wash them, but we live in the drive where he could do anything, share a room with several other boys. And that was it. That's when he met Raisa and eventually married her. They only had one daughter. So law was very, very ill-regarded in the Soviet Union at the time. Engineering, that was a thing. A country which needed so much construction, especially reconstruction after the Second World War. Even medicine was a low status occupation. I know it might seem staggering to an Occidental, but he rose up the Soviet Communist Party nomenclatura and seemed to be a firm believer in Stalinism. It's only later he began to question these things. And then he was personally incorruptible. He was in charge of agriculture in the 1970s, which was definitely a failure, but he still got into the Politburo, which was really the cabinet of roughly 20 ministers meeting at Staraya Ploshad every week in Moscow. And sometimes people from different Union republics, mostly there were Russians, particularly Muscovites, and that was it. Be a candidate member for a while, be a full member, and that was really what governed the country. And people had thought in 1984, when Andropov died, would it be him? No, it wasn't. But Chernenko lived barely a year after that. But they had three leaders die in 3 years. This is looking ridiculous. They went for the youthful Mikhail Gorbachev, who I think was 58. And then talking about glasnost as an openness. And he really changed things. Someone was like a human being and introduced his wife to the public. Up until this time, the public weren't even told whether the leader was married or not. Just there was no free media. Their default setting was secrecy, because it was a sort of paranoiac state. And he was approachable. He was relatable in the modern phrase. He seemed to have a sense of humor. He even used to smile in public. And he didn't demand this sort of fawning cult of personality. But notably, his rival between him and Grigory Romanov, who was general secretary of the Communist Party in Leningrad. So Romanov at that point was demoted from his position and lived in a comfortable retirement in Moscow, became chairman of the Society of Leningrad is in Moscow, and I've seen his grave. I think it's in Kuntsev. It's one of the main cemeteries. It's not Novodevichy, which is sort of only one down from Red Square in terms of status as a place to be buried. Okay, because he couldn't have his rival having a major position in charge of the second biggest city. So he really talked about perestroika, restructuring the economy, and bringing in some small free market reforms. Now, people always allowed their cabbage patch, and these homegrown vegetables they were allowed to sell. That was the only part of the sort of economy that actually worked in distributing food around the country. So he gradually introduced that. And he thought this was reform that he may preserve. He's going to make communists better. Bit of an Alexander Dubček. And you know, he said he wasn't going to intervene in 1989. If these Eastern European communist countries, if they wanted to decommunize, they would be free to do so. So obviously some Stalin's hardliners were aghast. And then though he was greeted Gorby, Gorby in East Germany when he visited, that was in October 1989 to celebrate the 40th anniversary of the foundation of the German Democratic Republic. And they were hoping that Mikhail Gorbachev would persuade Erich Honecker, the head of the Socialist Unity Party, as in the East German communists, to allow freedom. But Gorbachev didn't interfere. But yeah, but then people were demanding independence for Latvia, Lithuania, for Estonia, and so on. They said they really could be free. And communists were actually losing elections to city councils and county councils and Union Republic legislatures. And some people say, well, just annul the result and we'll have one party rule. We will not have one party rule. But by 1991, was it going too far? Places like Latvia and Lithuania actually saying we are independent and saying, no, you can't do that. And a standoff and some people get killed. Or January 1990, when Soviet troops shot dead dozens of people in Baku, when a low level conflict started between Azerbaijan and Armenia, both part of the Soviet Union at the time, it was about to get a lot worse. That's why he's detested in Azerbaijan. They blame him for that. Then in 1991, he began to think that capitalism was going too far. Could he roll it back? But by then it had taken on a momentum of its own. And there were young liberals who really embraced this, say, let's go the whole hog with capitalism. And it was too late to stop. And that's when he went for his holiday in the Black Sea Dacha in August 1991, was it that 18th of August? And that's when the August coup happened. And that's when the State Committee for the State of Emergency Situation proclaimed that it was assuming power because Comrade Gorbachev has been taken ill. He wasn't, he's under house arrest. So I wonder if some of the KGB were in on the plot, who were those who were guarding him, or the protective service. Obviously, there were some KGB people who were behind the plot, and that was it. And then he obviously somehow was able to release a video that he was not remotely ill. But anyway, he was able to return 3 days later when the coup failed. But Boris Yeltsin, he was president of the Russian Federation. The Russian Federation is obviously one of the subjects of the Soviet Union. And Yeltsin was the man of the moment. He'd stood on a tank and addressed the crowd. And people said, take to the streets and don't back down and we'll defeat this putsch, which he eventually did. And that's why Gorbachev chose to tender his resignation. He felt he democratized the Soviet Union he'd wanted to preserve, had given up the ghost, had split into 15 separate Union republics by the end of 1991. And that's why it was Christmas Eve, 1991, when the red flag was lowered at the Kremlin for the last time and the Russian tricolor was hoisted. And then he enjoyed his retirement, famously as part of some sort of McDonald's ad or something like that. And so he died in 2022. He did support the Russian invasion of Crimea, but otherwise he refrained from most political comments. But yeah, I mean, he was well regarded abroad for his writings, public speeches, and so on, for agreeing to the 4+2 deal that, I mean, that Germany would reunite, that the Soviet army would eventually withdraw, not completed to 1994 and so on. But a lot of people dumped on him, blamed him for Yeltsin. But Yeltsin, although he'd ensured freedom in 1991, Yeltsin was known for his dysfunction, turning it into a kleptocracy, for bandit capitalism, people not being paid on time, shock therapy, you know, shocks are never good. And so then he became a convenient whipping boy, Gorbachev, because he's out of power. He didn't have much money. He wasn't going to throw his weight around. And what a difference was from Putin. You know, Putin, who's a hyper-nationalist, who's a militarist, who's an oppressor, who's a Stalinist and so on, who's an absolute ogre. And, you know, Gorbachev maybe can't blame him too much for going along with an evil system in the early days, because that was a sort of 360-degree propaganda he was subjected to. He did at least move it in the right direction, trying to be humane, trying to reduce human suffering, rather than Putin's trying to produce human suffering. And there he was buried in Novodevichy. So and Putin didn't go to the funeral. So remember, Margaret Thatcher had met him about a year before he became General Secretary, a man we can do business with. And notably, he had good chemistry with President Ronald Reagan, who visited him in the summer of 1988, with Margaret Thatcher, with other Western leaders, with Helmut Kohl, the Chancellor of the German Federal Republic. Well, Gorbachev, you know, Russia needs a new Gorbachev to give them their freedom back. But I don't see one on the horizon.